In the Moment is supported by the South Dakota Humanities Council, presenting the South Dakota Festival of Books, September 26th to 28th in Spearfish.
A key leadership challenge in moving forward with a new men's prison emerges. From SDPB, today is Wednesday, September 3rd. This is In the Moment. Coming up this hour, what do the holdouts want? We ask our political analysts to help us understand the basics of a special session. And then we'll evaluate what a vote on a new men's prison should actually be about. Of course, a political vote is often about more than the core issue, so we will evaluate as well some last-minute lobbying from legislators. Jean Hunhoff and Linda Duba are our guides today. But first, SDPB has launched large-scale layoffs. We'll talk with the leader of Friends of SDPB about the role of philanthropy in an era of absent federal support. That's coming up after the news. We're broadcasting today from SDPB's Kirby Family Studio in Sioux Falls. I'm Lori Walsh. You're in the moment, and news is first. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. It's been a tough year at SDPB. The defunding of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting created an urgent budget shortfall, which means programming cuts are coming. And yes, that includes In the Moment. Our final broadcast is scheduled for October 31st. We're going to take a hard look at how SDPB is funded and the challenges of backfilling cuts through fundraising efforts. A note to listeners, when SDPB is in the news, we cover the story with the same editorial and ethical standards we bring to our other interviews. We rely on our executive producer, SDPB's Kara Hetland, for that editorial guidance. Here's our guest, Brian Howlett. He's the chief executive officer of Friends of SDPB. He joined me in SDPB's Kirby Family Studio in Sioux Falls. Go back to around 2019 to 2021. For the Sound Vision campaign, which was an extraordinarily successful fundraising campaign from Friends of South Dakota Public Broadcasting, $14.1 million raised, exceeded the goal. And here are a few things as I looked back that were created in the final report about Sound Vision. Boutique studios opened in Aberdeen, Pine Ridge, Brookings, Spearfish, to the point where 90% of South Dakotans could drive within an hour of their houses to tell their stories. The organization reimagined the hallmark programs In the Moment, South Dakota Focus, and Dakota Life to make them more relevant and timely. You hired additional content creator freelancers to increase locally produced programmings, including some great documentaries, launched the Early Learning Initiative, added a business and economic journalist and a diversity reporter, and you raised money for a permanent endowment to ensure it was sustainable for generations to come.
It was a great effort. I'm really proud of us at SDPB and Friends of SDPB. You were a huge part of that. I mean, that everybody on staff was a huge part of that. And it was an expansion plan, you know? It was how do we, the studios in Sioux Falls and Rapid City were in on that as well. Right. And, you know, it was to create more relevant local programming. It was to get better. I think if you look at what we did in that 2016 strategic plan that finalized, that started this campaign, I mean, that was a hard breaking point for SDPB where we became, you know, a really relevant media company.
What happened? How did we get to the SDPB Bison campaign? And then we'll talk about what the campaign is and what your hopes are for the future, because I don't want to leave people with a complete sense of desolation. However, what I just laid out to you is pretty discouraging, because almost everything that I just told you is on the chopping block.
Fair enough. You know, I mean, when we concluded that campaign at the end of 2021, we used those dollars to build all those things. And the endowment piece of it, you know, we hold about $10 million in the endowment, certain restrictions on that, of course, since it's an endowment. But outside of that, you know, we did all those things and we created them. And now, I mean, there's just no way to plan for the loss of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. And that, you know, you're sitting here and you're doing the work that we do at SDPB each and every day. And all of a sudden, 25% of your budget's gone in literally 75 days. There's no way to plan for that. I mean, I wish that if I could, I mean, obviously I didn't want the rescission to happen, but SDPB and Corporation for Public Broadcasting were funded 2 years in advance. If they would have just left that funding there and not taken it back and at least given us 2 years to plan, this wouldn't have been such a mess. And it's just such a disappointment to me that, like, there's stations like us and smaller ones and bigger ones that are going through this same thing. You know, it's every day you look at Current, which is the insider newspaper for public media, and it's 30 jobs here, 20 jobs here, 5 jobs there. And the places that are losing 5 people, they've only got like 7, 8, 9 people on staff, you know? And so for them, it's super disappointing. For us, it's just the loss of local programming is just soul crushing, because that's what we do and that's what we brag about, you know?
So I want to go back to Governor Kristi Noem's budget address last year, 2024. And then this push in January during the legislative session to shore up, because pretty much she came in her governor's, you know, budget recommendation and said you shouldn't be funding them. And then it was go. Put together them. You had already put together many materials because you fundraise all the time. You're an award-winning fundraising team in the nation for public broadcasting. It should be noted. You go to Pierre. You rally the troops, people get on buses, and they come to Pierre. What were you hearing from South Dakotans and from lawmakers at that time? Because at the end of the legislative session, that funding was fully restored at the state level.
I think there were two reasons. I mean, if Governor Noem hadn't left the state, who knows what would have happened. It would have been a much harder battle. But when she left, that was a fundamental breaking point, that the person that was really pushing that wasn't there to push it anymore, you know? So that left us a lane to drive through. And, you know, when we talked to every legislator from the handful of liberals to the conservative mass, almost all of them were highly supportive of us because we had done our work beforehand and said, this is what your dollars go to, you know, before the former governor made her speech. And so in the legislature, we found a really receptive audience. And, you know, the other piece of that plan was there was nothing to replace SDPB's primary public safety service and some of the other parts with education that we do, right? And the legislature didn't want to see that gone. And so they all supported us. And so that group in the legislature that backed us and became our champions was really vocal. And then, so we had worked at that angle, but then the thing that really tipped the scales was everybody who's listening today, that like all of those people that made phone calls and emails and got on the bus, it was an overwhelming response from the audience saying that this is important and this matters. And so here we are.
From what I can tell, and you probably have a closer look at it than I do, none of that support has faded. Those people are still writing checks, making pledges, raising their money, and calling their congressional delegates. The local support hasn't necessarily ended. What do you know happened with the congressional delegates? Why did they change their minds about the value of SDPB? Or did they change their minds about the value of SDPB?
I mean, when Senator Thune is the leader of the caucus, he has to hold that together and carry the president's agenda, whether he likes it or not. So I can't speak to his intentions. Both Senator Rounds and Representative Johnson have made public statements about they believe in supporting SDPB. They support us personally, which is true. And they're highly supportive of SDPB. But again, I think it was a national movement from an administration that wants to make significant cuts. And this cut, I mean, they clearly don't like media very well. And this is the one media that they had control over directly with funding, and they could take that away. And they did. You know, I think if you look at some of the other things that the administration has done to the media, I mean, it is clear intimidation tactics with what's happened at Paramount CBS and ABC. I mean, that's incredibly public, and it's a move to silence your critics. And so, I mean, I think NPR and PBS, mostly fair, mostly down the middle of the aisle, and we got punished for being truth tellers.
Let's talk about what comes next, because there was you launched the SDPB Bison campaign.
I like to say we launched the SDPB Bison campaign because it's never about the staff at the fundraising team. It's about what the intentions of SDPB's donors are and the work that people like Lori Walsh, Ari, and Ellen put out every day, you know? And that's the fundraising team is just a conduit to connect those two dots. Yeah. So it's about the programming, and it's about the people who are listening and care about SDPB.
So for people who don't know, the layoffs, 15 staff members, 5 open positions not to be filled, the ending of the program, including me, I've been laid off effective October 31st, or I've been received a letter of intent to lay off with the effective date October 31st, as my two producers have as well. The show's In the Moment and South Dakota Focus will go away. The show Dakota Life will be, you know, shrunk a little bit and will have a smaller footprint. Education team going away, some of our digital team going away. That's a big hit to local programming. We, the organization, launches the Bison campaign. What's the goal? What are you trying to do now? In other words, what is the response to this this loss?
You know, the response is twofold. The first is the Bison campaign. You know, we launched that. The day the rescission started, or the Monday after the rescission happened on a Thursday. The Monday afterwards, we came in and said, all right, what's going to be our plan? And so we created this effort. It's $2 million. It's different than what Sound Vision was because it's not deferred money. This is all current year funds. Mm-hmm. This is set up with some of the other organizational changes that we've had to try to keep program losses to the smallest possible thing that we can, you know? And so it is working to make sure that we still have the programs that you mentioned going forward for the rest of this fiscal year. So that's part one of the Bison campaign. Part two will be a very aggressive strategic plan that the network will lead, not Friends, but the network will lead to make sure it's sustainable in the long term. You know, so we gotta get through this year, and that's why I mentioned earlier that if we just could have had 2 years to plan, it wouldn't have been so stark, and we wouldn't have had to do this emergency thing. But, like, we're in the boat we're in.
You said early in our conversation that 2 years, Corporation for Public Broadcasting was designed to be inoculated against this exact thing. So my question is, do you think the fact that it got through was intentionally to sort of make all these decisions and all this fundraising happen very, very quickly and therefore across the nation have a hard time finding success?
Yeah, I think so. You know, you look at public media's model, SDPB is probably in the 70th percentile in the size of stations, you know, when you look at it nationally. And we have our fundraising structured a little bit different because we copied a university model a little bit more than some of our other stations that just do membership, you know, and that's what Sound Vision built. And so we are better prepared than almost every other station across the country to react to this. And so they knew that it would be destabilizing, especially without the backbone of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. I think about it as a church, and maybe that's inelegant to talk about, but the Corporation for Public Broadcasting was kind of like the cornerstone of your church. And things like In the Moment are the stained glass Stations of the Cross as you walk around, and the beautiful spire on top is Ken Burns, you know, Revolutionary War. And the reason why we were funded 2 years in advance is because if you're going to make a 12-hour movie, you got to know, you got to be able to plan that, you know? So when this rescission went through and it kicked out the cornerstone Corporation for Public Broadcasting, it's absolutely destabilizing.
Yeah. So is it fair to say that the SDPB, because of Sound Vision, is in a much better position, even though the cuts are going to be devastating? You're still going to turn on your radio station. You're still going to turn on your television. You're still going to see SDPB. It will survive, and hopefully it will rebuild. Is that a fair assessment, or what's missing in that?
I would say the only thing that's missing in that is it wasn't just Sound Vision, the fundraising campaign. It's more Sound Vision, the strategic plan that led to that, and the rebuilding of the programs that made us so much more viable.
How was that strategic plan done, and is the new strategic plan going to be patterned in a similar way? Like, help us understand strategic planning.
Yeah, that's a question mostly for Julie, but Julie Overgaard, executive director. Mm-hmm. I think that, like, we had a facilitator whose first job was at SDPB and went on to run some big stations out on the East Coast and things. And he came back and he just asked us the tough questions about what are your priorities? Where are the holes in your coverage? You know, I mean, we had a closet studio at the University of Sioux Falls and a studio you couldn't find in Rapid City, and they were great, and USF was a wonderful, is a wonderful partner. But, like, we didn't have a street for our presence in Rapid City and Sioux Falls, and the first thing that Dennis came in and said was, like, hey, you guys are missing massive amounts of local programming because you don't have a presence in the population centers. And that's why we did it, you know? I mean, so it's like, that's why we built this place, was to create new local programming. We didn't need a facility for ourselves. We needed a facility to bring, to capture programs and bring them out to the masses. And so, like, that strategic planning process, I assume, will be the same piece where it's like, here's the tough questions that we have to get answered. And, you know, all of our internal and external stakeholders having a say in that and trying to build it up between November 1st and January 15th, probably.
How's it going? The fundraising, the Bison campaign, what sorts of generosity are you seeing across the state? What kind of philanthropy are you seeing? And what kind of messages are people sending you when they send in their support?
Lots of love. Lots of, I can't imagine South Dakota without SDPB. I can't imagine South Dakota without In the Moment. I can't imagine how hard it must be. There's been some angry messages that we've received. But for the most part, it's gone really well. You know, when you launch a $2 million capital campaign on no notice, it's pretty startling. And we're, you know, $1.3-ish million to the goal. And it's been
60% almost?
Yeah, almost 60%. You know, I mean, that's been the first.
Looking at sdpbfriends.org, and I'm seeing 59% to the goal. Is that probably pretty close to accurate today?
It's pretty close to accurate. I'd say there's probably a couple gifts that we're still working on processing, and that number will continue to jump by the time this airs.
And these are the goal is $2 million with gifts identified by October 31st. All right. Now, what happens next? Is it possible to bring staff back? Is it possible to bring shows back? Or is that kind of, you know, a false hope? And that the, you know, should people, in other words, should people be thinking of, like, hey, how much does it cost to bring this program back? Or should people be thinking, what can I do that creates a stability, even if my favorite program goes away? But I definitely want to be funding the organization as a whole to keep the infrastructure built, and hopefully we'll be building back in the future. How should people think about it?
I mean, the $2 million won't bring back every job, but it's, the goal is to make sure there's as little program disruption as possible. You know, people give to us. They love the national stuff and they give to us for that, but they also primarily give to us because of local programming. And so we want to make sure that we keep delivering that. And that's the goal. I know that, like, the internal team, which I am not on that on the network side, you know, they're going to look at, all right, we raised $2.1 million. Here's the 7-8 things we can bring back with that, you know, out of the 15 that we're losing.
And that's not your decision to make.
That is not my decision to make. Fundraisers, good fundraising is best done when the organizational leadership comes up with a concept and a project, and then they let people like me run with it and connect the folks who care to the programs. And so that is not on my list of things that I get to do because of the firewall. Just like it is.
The firewall is important. Even though we're sitting here having a conversation,
Yep,
there's lots of things that don't go back and forth between that firewall. What have I not asked you? What do you think people, are there any, you know, people are confused about something, or they're calling you again and again, you're explaining the same thing. Hey, this is how it works. Anything in that area that you want to make sure that you clarify or clear up publicly?
You know, the biggest question, the only question that I get is, I mean, we get a lot of questions, but the biggest one that hangs out there is what happens after June 30? Because I don't want to take donors' dollars that are given with the best intention, and that June 30, 2026, we still have to walk away from this program. So our leadership and I, everyone is super committed to making sure that we're going to invest your dollars well, but we're going to invest them for the long term too, and really make it sustainable going forward. I know that we are going to see an uptick in fundraising because the public now understands that we need it because of that $2.3 million. Will it be the entire 2.3 every year? No. Will it be this year? Probably one time. And so we're going to have to do more at Friends, as Julie said, to make sure that we have program losses. And then we got to figure out other models to make operating a little more affordable.
Do you have hope that politically there could be either a change in people's opinions or a way that once the rescission was a very specific political process, at some point there is, you know, more of an agreement from, you know, from Democrats, from Republicans, from people from smaller states, people with large urban centers, compromises might be made? Or do you think it's done? Do you think, like, there's not going to be a replacement for the Corporation for Public Broadcasting? Everything's coming back from the states? Or, I mean, maybe I'm giving you too many choices there.
No, I mean,
it kind of feels like we have no idea. I just feel like I have no idea if that's going to happen. Do you?
No. I mean, okay. Who knows? I mean, I don't think it's happening this year, yeah. And I don't think it will happen under the current administration. Yeah. So I think it's like 2-3 years of, you know, there's no dollars for anything national. But I do think, like, we keep hearing things every day about what Corporation for Public Broadcasting does, you know,
right.
I mean, and yeah. other parts of the industry picking it up. And that's why there's just so many things happening nationally on a level that Julie's watching and participating in, but the rest of us aren't, you know, that, okay, music rights are going to get cleared. We can still produce Jazz Nightly, you know, whereas on the day of the rescission, we're like, man, Corporation for Public Broadcasting does that. How are we going to produce a local jazz show without, right. you know, or them negotiating.
Jazz Nightly stays, in case people were wondering.
Yeah.
So far, that program is not being cut.
Yeah. Yeah. And so then it's just like we're reacting and participating with what's happening nationally, but our jobs in Sioux Falls, Vermilion, and Rapid City are just to work as hard as we can to make sure that we blunt the local programming losses.
What kind of leadership have you seen in this organization? You've been busy. But what have you seen either on the network side or on the friend side that gives you encouragement for how the organization is handling this disruption?
On the friends team, I'm just incredibly proud of the work that they do and how everyone said, let's do this. You know, I mean, we're charged with making sure that we think about the future and deliver dollars for the future. And so it's been fun to lead a team that is highly producing and really digging in. On the network side, I just cannot express how much admiration I have for the grace and tenacity that everyone, even those people who got the layoff notices, have still come in and done their work at a high level, who have still said, we're going to do this as long as we can, even though I now need to look for a different job or wait on what happens with the Bison campaign, and the grace that the staff has done their jobs with in really an unbelievable, unbearable situation. I mean, it's brought me to tears multiple times just thinking about how much work that we all collectively have put into this and how these people are like, no, we're journalists. We're going to get the show out. We're going to do this, even though it's hard to today.
That's Ryan Howlett, Chief Executive Officer of Friends of SDPB. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. The 2026 legislative session in South Dakota might be far on the horizon, but our legislature is convening in Pierre this month. There's a special session scheduled for September 23rd to vote on the new South Dakota men's prison. I'm sure you know it is a hot-button issue. We're going to turn to our Dakota political junkies for their analysis into the mechanics of a special session in general. And then afterwards, we'll give you an update on a few things that transpired over the long holiday weekend. Republican Gene Hunhoff is a former South Dakota state senator. Democrat Linda Duba is a former South Dakota state representative.
So we already have the framework for the prison. Now it is up to individuals who are on that task force to go forth and literally sell that to the caucus. Mm. So I know there was some reluctance on the part of some of the House and House leaders, not so much the Senate, but the House leaders on what we arrived at. Everyone agreed it was a unanimous decision what we voted on. So it'll be interesting to see what work has occurred now. And now that we've gotten, Gene, you may know this. I think I mentioned it to you last week when we talked. J.D. Dunn and Henry Carlson have come back and said, yes, we can build a 1,500-bed facility on the property north of town where that
plant was
supposed to be.
Yeah, the plant
was supposed to be.
North of Sioux Falls.
So we can use the land. Mm-hmm. We can build a facility. We're going to get the high quality 100-year promise that we made. What we are going to have to do is cut down on some recreation space, some education space, some religious space. I don't know the actual square footage, but in order to meet that 1,500, this is what we had to do. We lost a little bit of that. We're getting basically what we need to move forward. We're going to get some of the money that we invested in the Lincoln County piece. We'll get some of that back. So that's got to help. Here's what will happen. We'll take a look at what's in the prison fund. We'll understand we don't have to write a check for the entire amount today. People need to get that through their heads. We have a fund. It's going to grow. It's in a trust fund. So we pay as we go. That's how it works. It's a guaranteed maximum price, so we're not going to exceed that. So we know that. So you sell that. You sell why is it advantageous to be so close to where we're at. We'll be able to keep our workforce. Recruiting will be better. You know, all of these things. These discussions should be happening now. Okay. And we should be talking to the people who voted against it during the session. The people who were for it are probably not going to change their minds. They're going to be for it. So it's those 36 members of the House. That's where the focus is. You don't want to be there all day, but you will have some holdouts. We still have groups of individuals out there who believe that we can magically transform the current facility. I don't know what they're thinking. And that we should be focusing our efforts on reducing recidivism. We need the bricks and mortar to move forward. So that's the focus. We can't get bogged down with all of the other ancillary things that come to mind. When you come in that morning, both groups, both parties will go straight to caucus. They'll have a discussion. They'll come down on the floor. That should be done within one vote, but it may not be.
Senator Hunhoff, two questions. One is, what would you add to what Representative Duba just said? And the second is, what do the holdouts want? Do they want something? Are they holding out for a reason? Or are they holding out because they're going to vote no? Or is there a bargaining part there? Like, I'll hold out until this happens. Help us understand those two things.
I wish I had the crystal ball that I could give you the answer. You know, I think that Representative Duba went through the process correctly. I think there might be some more back discussions when the caucuses do meet, some prior work that's going to be done by the leadership from both of the houses to see if they can bring the people to the table so that when they walk into that caucus, they have a better idea of can they come together. And I think they're going to have to strategize for that. And I think Representative Duba in her comments said, you know, the committee voted on this and now they should be unanimous on that. You know, there's some homework that's going to have to be done before, and it's going on right now. There's no doubt in my mind. So that, in a sense, they've gone through the steps. They've reconsulted. They've done everything. They've got the bid down to what they wanted. They're getting the 1,500 beds. So, you know, when you go through that process and you walk into your caucuses and you still have some opposition there, I think that's going to be the challenge as to how they bring those people to the table. Now, you said the second question was, you know, what are the opponents? You know, I don't know what the opponents are looking at other than what Representative Duba said, looking at the current location and what you can do. I think that was thoroughly vetted in both those consultations or consultant reports that facility is not sustainable. That is not meet the needs. There's too many problems there. It needs to come down. And I think the big issue that Representative Duba mentioned is stay the focus on the building, because there's another sidebar here, and that's the ancillaries, and that's everything that's going to be required to support what this committee is saying to reduce recidivism, because that is not going to be the current structure, organizational structure, and the staffing that they have for that facility currently. And there's going to have to be some different thought processes on how we prepare these inmates for exit back into the private sector and what kind of services we're going to need to provide them. So what my concern is that doesn't get brought into this discussion. The session is for the prison construction. Stay focused on that. But those that are naysayers will have some other things to bring in there, and they'll try to deviate. So it'll have to be a strong leadership that says, no, we're here to talk about this, and let's stay focused on that.
And one of the things comes to mind already when you talk about the recreation space, the educational spaces, and religious. The religious spaces. We certainly did some coverage on the original plan and whether or not it had a chapel. And that was a big touch point for people, whether or not there was appropriate designated religious spaces for people who were incarcerated. But if I understand Jean right, Linda, strong leadership is going to say, we're going to deal with that later. Is something like a religious space in a chapel part of the construction thing, or is it part of the recidivism conversation?
It's both, because it is part of the construction. You can't build a new facility, without programming space, without, you know, education space, and without religious space. You cannot. If all we're going to do is go put them in cells, it's ridiculous. So that is part of the conversation, but we will still have much more space available than we have in the current facility. And the more important focus, and again, if we're trying to sell this to the people who are really squishy about it, we can talk about the technology and the much better line of sight that we will have for those inmates who will be in the prison. And so it'll be a safer environment. It'll be easier to maintain. I mean, all of the above. That goes with the physical plant. And we can stress the fact that we will have more space. But we do not want to get bogged down with the costs of what it will cost to staff that. There's another summer study that's working on that right now.
Okay. So this special session on September 23rd, focus on the building, focus on the brick and mortar, make those decisions, and
yes,
then get to the next phase.
That's right.
We recorded this conversation before the long weekend. You heard Hunhoff say she wished she had a crystal ball to foresee what the holdouts might want going into the session. That crystal ball gained some clarity. 20 representatives sent a press release over Labor Day weekend. They said they didn't have faith in the current leadership of the Department of Corrections. On Tuesday, Secretary Kelly Wasco said she will resign. There's more to this conversation. It's coming up after the break. You're on listener-supported SDPB. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. Let's get back to our extended Dakota Political Junkies conversation today. We'll jump back in to discuss how national economic trends impact South Dakota's financial future. Our junkies are former state legislators Jean Hunhoff and Linda Duba. Hunhoff served in the Senate as a Republican. Duba served in the House as a Democrat. What economic indicators do you start paying attention to when you're thinking, okay, this is going to affect appropriations, this is going to affect the budget? Because we ask this question a lot, and mostly the answers we get are, we'll find out, or like, wait and see. And that feels a little, to use Linda's word, squishy to me as a journalist. So Jean Hunhoff, tell us a little bit about some of the national indicators or some of those markers that you think of that you know, hey, this is going to affect state budget next year, 3 months from now, immediately.
Well, I have to tell you is that I look at our revenue sources and what's happening to them, and we see what sales tax, what's happening in that arena, that we're not meeting our projections. So that tells me people are not spending like they were before, or they're not coming to our state. So then I look at what inflation is doing. I look at also, I've been listening to and reading about the housing market, and that would be contractors' excise tax. They said that, you know, this generation, this morning I was listening to a report, and it said that, you know, people are expecting they have their dream job by the time they're 29. They're able to purchase a home at 30, and they've got their retirement well started by age 35. I think I look at South Dakota and I think, I don't think that's probably quite accurate that we see here in South Dakota. Because if you look at new housing starts, and I look in my own community, I think that's where I always start. You know, we certainly had a shortage. We now have a lot of apartment buildings that are going up, and we have a lot of homes. And the thing that I'm seeing, and I have two have recently been in the development, which is a newer one, and it's probably 30 years old now. Their houses are very nice. They're coming up for sale, and they're not selling. They're sitting here. And so that's telling me, okay, we've got all these apartments. People are coming there. what's happening to the houses that they're in. So globally, I look at what that inflation is doing. I look at national markets as what they're doing. And South Dakota, number one in ag, I follow the ag prices. I'm seeing what the crops, what the production, you know, we know that with beef, we don't have the herds to do the supplies because back when we had tough times, they made the herd smaller and they're just starting to come back up. But you've got to have a price and you have to have a market and you've got the tariffs. So, you know, it's not just one single indicator that I look at. I look at a broad spectrum for the national economy and listen. And then I look at my own South Dakota and see what's going on.
Yeah. Linda, what would you add to that?
So being a former worked at Citibank financial right. services person, we also need to look at debt. So what are people's debt versus savings rates? So if our savings are going down and those credit card balances are being built, that tells us a lot about people are having to revolve debt to pay for essentials, for food, for gas, you know, possibly for rent. So those things are important. We continually hear about interest rates. Now, we do pay attention to the Fed, and the Fed is being driven by inflation and by the jobs market. So if we're seeing the jobs market be soft and we're seeing inflation climbing, you know, it's a very fine line that the Fed walks in terms of where should that interest rate be? Because if they drop it too soon or too much, we could trigger even higher inflation, which again, then bankruptcies are also up. And I, you know, again, I look locally like Gene does, but I also look nationally. And when your bankruptcies are rising and they're saying our bankruptcies are as high as they were during COVID, then that is not a good indicator for us. Obviously, our budgets are primarily driven by sales tax and contractors' excise tax. But all the other factors that Gene listed and I talked to also drive whether people feel good enough to go out and spend.
Yeah. What about tourism? As you mentioned, this idea of, you know, people aren't, if the revenue shows that maybe not as many people are coming here and spending money. Is that the number? I don't know. I haven't looked at our tourism numbers. It could be the best year we've ever had.
But I don't think that's true, but okay. I haven't. Yeah. Gene, have you talked to anyone in the tourism
The only
office?
Thing I saw, no, I haven't, but I've just been reading. Again, they said Sturgis was exceeding, you know, and you and I had a conversation because I was out there working the first aid station, and I said, to me, it seemed like attendance was low, but according to the numbers, that was not the case. But I was going to say the other thing, if you're looking at thinking about that, look at the summer studies that are going on this summer and the headlines in the media of recent activities and really focused on energy in South Dakota. You know, I think that's going to be a big topic, and that is a big topic for economic development. I see where that Turner County decided to put a moratorium on wind energy. That impacts Yankton County. I also saw about up north, they're trying to do some plants up there. And then there's some discussion about nuclear plants and, you know, certainly with the data centers that we're talking about, production and that, you know, those are all factors in our state that are looking at what is impacting economic development. You know, certainly you've got to have some options out there and you've got to be in the market to recruit, to get the businesses that we need here. Not a lot of attention that I've seen lately about business. And I don't know in Sioux Falls, you know, I haven't been keeping up to track what new businesses are starting up there. You know, we've done a person here in the community has redeveloped our mall here in Yankton. And they did it by getting some tax abatement or some delay in taxes twice now to help fund bringing in, and they have three new businesses here, and certainly the parking lot is full. And, you know, that's one of the newest initiatives down here in this community. Again, but you don't hear a lot about that, but that's really the basis, what we're doing with business and with ag for supporting them for their expansion, other opportunities that are out there. And again, going back to the data centers, certainly we've invested heavily in Dakota State University, in the USD and SDSU, in providing programming and looking for the future to keep our youth in South Dakota. So, you know, I guess when you talk about economic development, it's not an isolated thing, but these summer studies in various topics, the property tax, the operational efficiency. You know, those groups are looking at basically what is needed in South Dakota in the end run by these activities of these committees.
We need more revenue, but we need different sources of revenue.
Data centers, nuclear. What are your thoughts on some of those as a future of economic development? I think the people of South Dakota are not afraid to say we don't want this in our backyard, for sure. So economic development is nuanced.
Yes, it is.
Nuclear and data centers are something people are definitely going to show up for and say, is this the right county for it?
Well, is it or isn't it? You know, nuclear energy is cheaper than other forms of energy, and it's extremely efficient. Now, data centers are a hot button with people because they use a high amount of energy and water. And water is important in this state, as we know. And we've invested in our infrastructure $600 million. But, you know, if you want to bring more people, more tax dollars, you've got to do something different. I am not opposed to it, but I have a forward-thinking business mindset. But I know that there are a lot of folks that say, we have enough people here, and we don't want to be sharing. So it'll be a real interesting discussion, and I think that's going to drive the governor's race. I'm going to be honest with you. I think that that's going to be a hot talking point.
Yeah, economic development driving the governor's race. Jean, go ahead. Yeah.
Well, just what Linda talked about, you know, water, you know, certainly now with Lewis and Clark here on the eastern end of the state, it took them a long time and they were passionate and they continued. And, you know, we were able to get set up and get water in the rural areas and in the cities that needed. And we saw results of that. We saw growth in industry in those communities. That same issue is facing West River.
Yes.
And, you know, that is going to be a topic out there because those aquifers are getting low. They need to have another source. You need to have water out there. You know, I think they're going to see that they're going to have those same challenges. And are we willing to support that endeavor? Because they do need water. There's no doubt about that. Really, water is basic. That's one of the basic things of Maslow's hierarchies of needs, and you need it. And so we may have to start investing in infrastructure and looking at West River to, you know, bring them up to speed so that, again, there's equity and gives them the opportunity for economic development, more resources out there.
Yeah. And then, you know, Senator Duhamel has been the champion of that for West River, and it has been a heavy lift, a heavy lift to even conduct a study or take a look at what the impacts are. But West River definitely needs more water. So we've got to begin. We can't sleep on that. That's important.
Yeah.
And that is our visioning, you know, what our future is out there.
Yes.
Do you have time to vision? I mean, like,
we should.
That's the summer studies, right? That's the summer studies.
That's the summer studies.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's visioning for what the future, and then you bring that for policy discussion. Absolutely.
Yeah. And sometimes, you see, I'm not a big fan of, this is our fourth out of 5 years that we've done tax studies. You know what that tells me? We need an oversight committee that is all-encompassing and not just legislative, that we should be looking at our taxes, our revenues and our expenses ongoing, and making decisions ongoing. If we're going to think we're going to do this one and done, that's not right. That is not visioning. That is not forward thinking. And so I've been trying to convince the powers that be that you need to do this ongoing, and we'll see what they think.
All right, one more thing before I let you go. We are recording this a few days ahead of schedule because the holiday is coming up, so people will actually hear it after the Labor Day holiday. So a few things might change about this, but we're watching. I think most people listening to this show know by now that In the Moment is not going to be here. I've been given my notification to be laid off along with my team of producers. And so October 31st, at this point, is our last day as employees here at SDPB. During that process of rescinding funding from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, U.S. Senator Mike Rounds had made kind of a handshake deal with the administration to get some block funding for tribal radio stations. And now we're hearing that nobody really knows if that money is coming from where it comes and when it comes, and stations are having a hard time planning because the clock is ticking to October 1st. What should we be watching for in the days ahead, Linda Duba? We'll start with you, and we'll wrap up with Jean Hanha.
Yeah, I just read that article yesterday, and I was disheartened by it. So what Senator Rounds did is he had a handshake agreement, but it was not in the bill that they voted on. So as a result of that, they don't have funding, and so now they have to go pull it from somewhere else. Well, where is that somewhere else? And what's the downstream impact if we're looking in Group B for the money for Group A? I mean, that's nobody wants to give up their funding or their grants. So this affects more than South Dakota. This definitely affects South Dakota. The tribal leaders in South Dakota said they haven't had those discussions or those talks. It is August 28th. I'm concerned for them. And other states like Alaska, Minnesota, Oklahoma, Arkansas, they're all affected too. I think what I'm going to be looking for is for Senator Rounds and other senators in those states, Senator Murkowski from Alaska, what's their next move now to procure that funding? They made that promise, and that bill passed as a result of that promise. Mm-hmm. Now they have to come through.
Jean Hanhoff, anything you would add about the future of public broadcasting and tribal public broadcasting in the future?
No, I would have to agree with Representative Duba as far as the federal dollars. Now, as far as South Dakota, you know, they've made their mind up. You know, I think that I don't like saying this, but in reality, the unintended consequence of what's going to result with these programming going away for public television. I think that, you know, you're under the gun now and there's not going to be anything there to fund to do that. But I think the unintended consequence will raise the awareness of the people of South Dakota that, you know, during next session, maybe there'll be some feedback about what is no longer apparent. You know, and I talk about transparency in the sense that, you know, we always hear we need to be transparent. You know, with public broadcasting, for the things that you're doing regarding state government, and I don't know if anything's going to be impacted about the public meetings or the government, the committee meetings, the legislature, and all of that. That was one way, and this program and other programming that you had, that you showed transparency as to what is happening to the people of South Dakota based on public service of the other government entities, and they're going to be losing that. And so sometimes it takes that to happen before you have a turnaround to realize, oh my, did I really lose this and now I don't have it? Is there something I can do to get back? I mean, that's a far thought, but to me, this unintended consequence, people do not understand. They just understand that people are telling them that, you know, you're not getting the right information. But the transparency for state government at the state level is going to be minimized as a result of this.
Yeah.
I'd agree.
My understanding is they prioritized open government. I'm not part of the planning process, so I'm not sure exactly what that looks like. If that means you'll see no change or if you'll see certain changes or a delay, I have not been advised. I know for sure public affairs programming, that, you know, local public affairs program, like In the Moment and South Dakota Focus, are going away, which I think is also a loss. I mean, I guess
it's a huge loss. And for those of you who listen to this every week, and there are thousands of you, I know that there are, I'm going to encourage you. I am a sustaining member. I give monthly. And I would encourage you to give to South Dakota Public Broadcasting. When you think about it, in rural areas of this state, this is their programming. I mean, it plays a big part. And it's unfortunate. When you called me and told me, I was angry, upset. But now I'm going to take a different approach, and I'm going to fight and try and get the funding that we need to save these programs. And that's what needs to happen. Not only locally, but I haven't given up the fight with Congress. They're right now creating their appropriations bills.
Right.
So we still have an opportunity. And I would encourage people out there, if you don't understand what's being taken, go learn about it. And then if it's important enough to you, fight for it.
That's Linda Duba and Jean Hanhoff, our Dakota political junkies for this week. You can find this conversation and all our political coverage online. Search for SDPB's Dakota Political Junkies wherever you get your podcasts. And that is our show for today. We hope that it served you. In the Moment is produced by Ellen Kester and Ari Youngerman. I'm your host, Lori Walsh. From all of us here at SDPB, thank you for listening.